It may seem hard to believe, but Northeast Missouri used to be a Democratic stronghold. But thanks to politicians like State Senator Brian Munslinger, that part of the state is now ruby red. The Lewis County Republican explains how this political revolution came to be on the latest edition of Politically Speaking.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I think that is fair to say.
As I say, hands to kiss and babies to shake.
But you know, I think my record speaks for itself.
That's a really good question.
Hello and welcome to the Politically Speaking podcast. I'm your host, Jason Rosenbaum, a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. Joining me in studio in St. Louis is
Joe Manis.
And joining us from Jefferson City, we have the person that represents most of Northeast Missouri in the Missouri Senate, our guest today.
Brian Munslinger.
A state senator from Williamstown. I looked up on Wikipedia. Williamstown is not actually a city. It's an unincorporated community in Lewis County. Is that correct?
That is correct. As of now, yes. It used to be a thriving city.
When did it used to be a thriving city?
Probably in the 80s?
Maybe a little bit before that. Actually, yeah, the 80s hit agriculture pretty hard.
Yes, yeah, the 70s and 80s is when the northern part of Missouri really started to empty out. It's a sad story.
Before we get to your background, could you just tell our listeners what counties encompass your district?
I'm not going to name them all because it's 14. It goes from Alexandria, Missouri, up by Keokuk, Iowa, clear down to Clarksville along the Mississippi River, and from there clear out to Brunswick on the Missouri River and up to Brookfield on 36 Highway.
Is it the continue.
It's a very large district. Kirksville, Hannibal, Bowling Green, some of those, Macon, those are some of the larger cities, Brookfield.
Yeah, I was going to say it really, because Kirksville to Hannibal in itself is... That's a couple hours drive usually.
Is your district the size of a small state?
Yes, I believe it is. Actually, I haven't recently had, since redistricting, I don't believe I've had any interns look at the size of my district compared to Rhode Island or some of the others. But
yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking your district is larger than Rhode Island.
It is.
It says something either about your district or Rhode Island. You want to give our listeners just a really quick rundown on your background, where you're from, what you did before you got into politics.
I actually grew up on the farm where I actually live now, and I'm actually the third generation to live in the old farmhouse.
Do you grow or raise?
I raise corn and soybeans. Used to have cattle, used to have some hogs, but with my job in the legislature, row crops is all I have time for.
You hadn't run for any political office before you decided to run in 2002 for the state house, is that correct?
That's correct. I had served on the Missouri Corn Growers Association. I had served on the National Corn Growers Association. I'd been very active with Farm Bureau. I'd served on the local extension council, and I'd also served on the county fair board in Lewis County. So I've been very active locally, but nothing into politics.
As many of our listeners know, Northeast Missouri politics is kind of a pet passion of mine. I've covered it extensively when I was working for the Columbia Daily Tribune from 2006 to 2008. And when you were elected in 2002 to represent, I think, what was it, a 3 or 4 county district in Northeast Missouri?
I believe it was 4.5 counties with no Walmarts, no stoplights, and no McDonald's.
In my opinion, politicians like you were at the tip of the spear of what I would consider a political revolution in Northeast Missouri. That took a long time to come to be, and it was not always smooth, as we'll get to in a minute. But what do you think has, you know, facilitated this change from this being a very democratic part of Missouri to the point where we're at now, where it's become as bright red can be almost?
Well, on the legislative level, they still have Democrats on some of the local levels. So we need to make that clear.
Not as
although
many
conservative
as
Democrats. Right, exactly. That's what I'm getting into. Now it's starting to seep down. So what do you think happened? What are the big issues? I think I know, but I want to hear from you.
Well, you know, I actually, back when Senator Merrill was my senator, I did some of his farming for him. I harvested his crops. I actually farmed, was a former state rep, DeCoster's farm. And so I had ties to the Democrats. I actually went to Democrat days in Hannibal when Senator Merrill was my senator. But as time went along, I think the party, the Democrat Party, actually left. I mean, the Democrats up there are very conservative. And I think that that's what they've seen is some of the liberal agendas that's been brought forth by the Democrat Party, especially on the national level, is not what they like.
And it's particular issues. Are there particular issues that you can identify?
I think regulations are the main things. People get tired of government telling them what to do all the time, every day. That, I believe, is front and foremost in everybody's mind, especially with this last election.
What about guns or the social issues, abortion, gay rights?
Guns have always been a part of our rural area, whether it's hunting, whether it's shooting sports. I was a 4-H shooting sports leader for years. Both of my kids actually went to national competition. One of our son actually still shoots in national competition. And guns, I think, have always been a great part in rural Missouri. Yes, abortion. We're very pro-life in that area, which, you know, that's not exactly what the Democrat Party's been pushing. So I think people they're slowly turning, and I'll go back to Senator Bond and Congressman Holsoff as the ones that actually started the change in Northeast Missouri.
Senator Bond is obviously from Mexico, Missouri. So when he was elected auditor, governor, U.S. senator, that kind of broke Republicans from that part of the state into the statewide consciousness.
Well, and Holsoff replaced Harold Volkmer, who I knew quite well when I was in the Washington Bureau back in the 80s, who was a conservative Democrat from Northeast Missouri and was sort of that mold where he was pro-gun, anti-abortion. But that sort of changed where you just where both parties tend to have, if you're I mean, it's pretty much cut and dried with some shifts, but I think Coster tried to cross that divide, particularly on guns, but it didn't appear to have helped. What do you think happened last fall? I mean, aside from the Trump train, but I mean, what did you think happened, and how will that affect? I mean, with Greitens being the new governor.
I think you're right. It was partially the Trump train. Trump had longer coattails than I thought he would. I'm glad he did. But with Coster, I think probably what happened was in my area, what really got to everybody up there was the Obama call that I'm sure went out in favor of Coster when the Greitens team picked that up and actually turned it around and used it against Coster. I had a lot of comments made to me about that issue, and that was the last week before the elections, and it was a hard-hitting one.
And just to kind of give a little bit more context, I think the last week of the election, President Barack Obama recorded a call supporting...
Actually, I got it.
Yeah, Chris Coster. I think it was a robocall.
And yes, I think it was.
And just to kind of give a little bit of context about how sweeping this victory was for Trump in Northeast Missouri, I was doing some research yesterday, and in 2006... the person that you defeated in 2010, Wes Schumacher, I was looking at which counties he won in 2006 when he won his seat the first time. He won Audrain County, Clark County, Knox County, Lewis County, Monroe County, Pike County, Rawls County, Schuyler County, and Scotland counties in 2006.
Now, Schumacher was a Democrat.
Schumacher was a Democrat. All of those counties last month either gave Donald Trump anywhere from 69.5% of the vote to 78% of the vote. And that doesn't include the counties that Bob Bainin won, like, you know, Marion, Adair County. I was drawing a blank there for a second. I mean, that's a pretty startling political shift. Why do you think that happened in just the span of 10 years that where those counties I just mentioned were voting for Democrats on a state level and were maybe sometimes voting for Democrats on a federal level, and now it's like completely unwinnable for the Democrats?
Well, if you look at what I did in 2010, if I remember right, I only lost one county.
Yes.
The only county you lost was Monroe County, which historically is one of the most Democratic counties in Missouri.
Yeah, which includes Hannibal.
No, it includes Monroe City.
Well, that's what I meant.
But it was Schumacher's home county.
Yes.
Yes. The what happened, you know, you're right. It has changed totally. But like I said, it started and it's just now coming around. I mean, I've got counties like Pike County, Rawls County, Lewis County, where it's been very hard to get anybody into those local offices. Every Republican that ran in those counties won this year, which election night, I was getting texts from those counties, and, you know, is this right? Can you check again? But, yeah. It was phenomenal, the, I'll say, coattails that Trump had.
Now, what does this say as far as Greitens goes? Greitens did not have the support of the Farm Bureau, did not have the support of any of the major ag groups. They all were with Koster. The main reason was many ag groups felt they didn't think that Greitens knew that much about agriculture and they weren't that enamored by him. Now he's the governor. How will rural Republicans work with him? Do you think you'll be able to work with him? Has he reached out to you? I'm just interested in what's happened in the last month.
Yes, yes. I have visited with Governor-elect Greitens. I, you know...
When?
Oh, a week ago.
Did he call you or did he come up to visit you?
No, I came to Jeff City. But
oh, okay.
They called me. I met with him. But I have visited with him prior to that on the phone. He's called me. But I think that at the time when the endorsements were made, Greitens was an unknown commodity, basically, in a lot of the ag groups. Koster had a voting record. But as Greitens went around the state and got to meet people, and I always say shaking a hand and looking them in the eye is one of the most important things you can do. When he went around the state and did that, people began to realize, and he started picking up a lot of ag support, and really, you know, the rural counties carried him. So
yeah, I mean, just for our listeners to understand, the last month before the election, Greitens, to his credit, did a lot of small rallies, small events, town halls. He just drove all over the state, did a lot of them. They didn't get a lot of attention at the time, but as you're saying, they did have an impact.
Oh, and he would have, you know, pretty good. You know, when I, as a senator, try to have a group together, you know, if I get 50 or something, that's pretty good. But he was a lot of times getting over 100 people to show up. So I think because people were interested in what he had to say. And he is very interested in agriculture. He realizes it is the largest industry in the state. And I look forward to working with him. Of course, I'm the Senate Ag Chairman. Look forward to working with him on the ag issues.
Do you think it's going to be helpful that, in addition to Greitens winning, the Lieutenant Governor-elect Mike Parson has a very deep background in agriculture? He was endorsed by all the ag commodity groups. You have a situation now where the governor and lieutenant governor are of the same party, and there is kind of an expectation that future Lieutenant Governor Parson is going to take a more active role in legislating and policymaking than maybe Lieutenant Governor Kinder has. What do you think the impact of that is going to be in the agriculture realm?
I think it will be good. However, the role of policymaking as lieutenant governor in this state has not been very much, but he is a very good spokesman for agriculture, great depth of knowledge, gave a great address yesterday at the Farm Bureau annual meeting. Senator Parson, of course, has served as a vice chairman on my ag committee in the past. I think it will be good, and it will be good reference for the governor-elect Greitens to have a good vice president or lieutenant governor, like Senator Parson, Lieutenant Governor-elect Parson, to serve in that capacity to be there if there are any questions also.
Was Greitens at that Farm Bureau meeting?
No.
So you've been the chairman of the Senate Agriculture Committee, I think, since the moment you were sworn into the Senate. It was kind of an unusual situation. But since you had been the House Agriculture Chairman, it really wasn't much of a leap for you to chair the Senate version of that. What are some of the big issues that farmers, ranchers, people within the agriculture realm are dealing with right now? And what do you think are going to be some potential pieces of legislation in that space that you think you'll take up next year?
Well, you know, I think really in agriculture, as we move forward, we are also very concerned about regulations and that. And when you look at the priorities of the Republican Party and what this election can mean, right to work, tort reform, I think all of those things will make not only the ag industry better, but I think we'll make all of our industries in Missouri better. I think we'll see a lot of entrepreneurs be able to start a new business. I think we'll see businesses that we currently have able to expand. I think we'll see a great boost in the economy. On ag issues, there are a few. I had a very good year last year with ag issues, getting them through. Unfortunately, some of them had to be overridden because they've been vetoed, but we took a lot off our plate last year. There are some issues with the dicamba. It's actually a weed herbicide that, the Department of Ag is dealing with now. Actually, EPA is dealing with it down in southeast Missouri and in west central Missouri. We're looking at that issue. I know Representative Don Roan, I'm probably going to let him take the lead on it since it was in his district. But
can you explain just very simply for our listeners exactly what the issue with that herbicide is?
That herbicide is one that's been around for years. And I remember when we used to use it, and it's all right to use it early in the growth stage of the crops. But as the later growth stages come along, it was no longer labeled to be used, and this year they used it down there on new genetically modified, mostly cotton in the boot heel, and they do have a new formulation of it that doesn't drift. This one volatilizes and drifts a long ways, the old formulation. They were using the old formulation, which was not approved, and it caused a lot of damage on everything from cantaloupes, watermelons, peaches, soybeans, a lot of things that were not resistant to that dicamba.
So what's the plan?
The Department of Ag really did not have very strong teeth. It was only a $1,000 fine. I think we need to up that, and actually some of the talk that I believe I've heard from Representative Roan was maybe going to a fine for each field that it was wrongly used on. The best plan is for EPA to actually, and they have, approved the new dicamba chemical to be approved to be used, and like I say, it's not as volatile, so hopefully it wouldn't cause the problems.
This is kind of a more global question. From the start of when I started covering Missouri politics, there have been instances where there's been turmoil in the Missouri Department of Agriculture in both the Blunt and Nixon administrations. Now, it seems like that turmoil has subsided a little bit. But what kind of expectations do you have for the Greitens administration to make sure that that particular department, which is very important to lots and lots of people in rural Missouri, is being run as smoothly as possible?
Well, right now, currently, I think Richard Fordyce came on as the director of agriculture. I think Richard Fordyce and the team that he's got out there, they've got a great plan together. One of the big issues that I have as the ag chairman in the Senate is getting the story across of why agriculture has changed, why we do things the way we do, why we can't go back to the 1950s. I think the department has done a good job of that, and I think right now, currently, they're doing a pretty good job. I put some money in the budget to help the Department of Agriculture get the message out. A lot of people, they're four generations removed from agriculture. They don't realize where their food comes from. And I think it's very important that going forward, that is one of the goals I feel that the Department of Agriculture should have. And they are trying to carry that ball forward now also.
Do you think Richard Fordyce should remain the Department of Agriculture director? I know that that's not a decision for the legislature to make. It's totally up to Eric Greitens. But did you provide any suggestion that he stay on, or do you expect him to be replaced in the coming weeks?
Like you said, that is totally up to the governor-elect Greitens. I do feel that Richard, like I say, has done a good job leading the Department of Agriculture. He's a farmer from Northwest Missouri. He's been involved in Soybean Association and other groups, Soil and Water. So his depth of knowledge is very good also. But what happens with the new administration, I don't know.
Now, as you're aware, there's been a lot of attention the last few months on the fact that the state's monthly revenue has not been at the level that is needed to fund the budget that the General Assembly approved in May. Even with Governor Jay Nixon's withholds of about $160 million, it's still going to be short. Looks like they may have to make about $200 million in cuts. The issue is going to be if Nixon does something in the next week or so to make some of those trims, or if he leaves it up to Greitens, which would be a similar situation to what happened in 2008, 2009, where Matt Blunt left it to Jay Nixon to deal with. Has there been talk yet on, A, what cuts you think need to be made, and, B, why the General Assembly's revenue estimate as far as the increase was so off?
You're asking me, Annette, that...
Well, you had a state senator.
You had a lot of points in that, though, Joe.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm throwing it out there because I figured. I mean, you know, you're a chairman.
Yes.
I'm sure there's been some discussion. I'm real interested in kind of what's been talked about the last few weeks since it's become clear that some cuts are going to have to come.
Well, actually, I agree with you. I do believe some cuts are going to have to be made, or withholds are going to have to be made, and I think as we look forward into our next budget, we're going to have to be very cautious. I do believe that with Governor Nixon leaving, we are going to have a very large budget to look at here in January of Medicaid and the expansions that's taken forth there this year, as we see the Medicaid really expanding. Since I've been in office, that has been the one thing that has expanded more than anything else. And to tell you the truth, it's hurting education in the state of Missouri.
Now, one of the problems with Medicaid, I mean, this is mainly for our listeners, is that the federal government provides about 2/3 of the money. So if you make cuts in Medicaid, that means you're going to lose twice as much in federal money. So then you have to cut more. And Missouri already is so low on adult qualification. So what changes can you make? Because I don't think you can lower the eligibility standards any lower.
No, I tend to agree with you, Joe. I don't know as we can lower that. I don't know of any state that is lower offhand.
No,
but,
there isn't.
Yeah, I thought we were probably at the bottom there. But I definitely don't see us expanding it.
Right. But I mean, are there things are you guys talking about cutting children eligibility, which could be done in theory?
I haven't been in on any of the upcoming budget discussions. I'm not on the budget committee. What I get is feedback from our Senate budget And that's really all I get. I mean, I do ask some questions, but I haven't been in on any discussions. I do know that you're right. We really can't cut Medicaid anymore. So we have to look at things like I said, education, whether it's higher education, whether it's DESE. Of course, we're required by Constitution to spend so much on those programs. So then we have to look at all of the other departments that Missouri has, and agriculture being one of them. And I do know that they have some divisions out there that are on a fee base of regulation, if you might not know or your listeners might not know. Actually, the Department of Agriculture is one of the largest, or is the consumer protection agency in the state, where they go out and check scales and meters, gas pumps, everything. It's the Department of Ag that's in control of that. Largely fee-based, but in some cases, a lot of those fees have not been changed since back in the 80s. So those are probably some things we do need to look at, is changing some fee structure to actually pay for doing that, so people are protected when they go to purchase hamburger or buy fuel or whatever. Those fee structures probably do need to be changed.
Now, there's been talk, and you've heard this over the last few years, but I'm told it may intensify when Trump becomes president, as far as what to do about improvements on highways and whether or not to turn particular interstates, such as parts of Interstate 70, into a toll road. The reason I'm asking you, because I know that's been a touchy subject in rural Missouri. I'm just wondering, I mean, what you've heard, what sort of talk, because that may come up this session.
I look for something along the lines of highway funding to come up. I sure do. And we really need to do something. Our farm-to-market roads are getting very bad. I'll just put it that way. They're deplorable, maybe. Our farm-to-market roads are falling apart. And with agriculture being the largest industry in the state, we definitely need to do something. As far as toll roads, I have been against those. When you look back at what the Blue Panel did in 2012, I believe, there's a blue ribbon panel put together. Toll roads was not what the people of Missouri wanted then either. But we do need to do something. Evidently, people of Missouri did not like sales taxes, so I guess we're at gas tax, which is a user fee. If you use the roads, you pay for it.
So you'd be open to increasing the state's gas tax?
I would, and I say that because we will never have good economic development without good infrastructure.
I think that the difficulty with this entire discussion is that there's clearly a need to improve the state's road system. I don't think that's in dispute. What's in dispute is how to pay for it. And there was a sales tax increase that was on the ballot that failed pretty dramatically. There have been attempts to raise the gas tax, which have come close to passing but have run into opposition. Is it just going to be a matter of taking the medicine, so to speak, and possibly raising some sort of tax or fee in order to do something like this?
Well, that's what you're signaling, right? That there may be revisiting of the gas tax?
Yes, I do believe that. I think Senator Leibler has something ready to go. I don't want to speak for him, but I'm pretty sure he does, something like what he actually got through last year through the Senate. I'm not sure the 6 cents would get us to where we really need to be with good infrastructure. And to bring businesses to Missouri, or keep the ones we've got, or to help agriculture, we're going to need some money to fix our roads.
Now, just so our listeners understand, Missouri has one of the lowest gas taxes in the country.
Yes, they do.
Yes.
I guess the other thing that's going to be a big deal, but it may only be a big deal for a short time, is, as you kind of alluded to, right to work, which, Joe, can you explain what right to work is?
Yeah, right to work is a law that would bar unions or employers from requiring all workers in a bargaining unit to pay dues or fees in order to stay working.
Missouri is not a right to work state, but there has been an expectation that if Eric Greitens won, that Missouri would become a right-to-work state very, very quickly. Have you heard anything about the timeline of how quickly the legislature may act on this particular issue? And do you think I mean, there's been some expectation that it may be passed and signed into law as early as February or March. Is that reasonable, or is that maybe putting the cart before the horse, so to speak?
Well, I think if you look at priorities, it's definitely got to be one of those that moves first, and I think it will. It is going to be quick. I don't know just how quick, but yeah, I could possibly see it being on the governor's desk by March. February might be a stretch, but
that might be a stretch. But and if you want to just, I know that I think you voted for right to work in the past. Kind of explain to our listeners why you feel it's needed, because as I'm sure you know, it also has a lot of passion and opposition among mainly Democrats, but also some Republicans
well. And labor unions.
And labor unions.
This basically
obviously
has pitted labor unions against business. Go ahead, sir.
Yes. Well, you know, I belong to a lot of groups and a lot of organizations. I just said I came back from the Farm Bureau annual meeting, which I've been a member of for, I don't even want to say how many years. But I belong to those because I believe they work for me. And that's the way that I push when somebody, and I've got cousins that are in the unions in St. Louis, and I just say, hey, I belong to them because I believe in them and because they work for me. I don't want to just give my money to somebody and not see them do the work. And actually, when you look at other states, union membership has increased after they became a right-to-work state. I've got a nephew down in Southwest Missouri that's in a union, but he's working over in Kansas right now, and he said he's making $13 an hour more in Kansas on a job he's doing than what he would the same job in Missouri.
Is there any reason why that's the case? Because there has been the contention from opponents of right to work that it depresses wages or causes people to
get
paid
more.
Well,
the studies, the overall studies have shown that pay is usually in right to work states is between 3% and 6% lower, but there also may be more jobs. I mean, the Wall Street Journal did a pretty expansive study a couple years ago, which I've looked at. I looked at some others too, but that one was the best. Now, the Heritage Foundation claims that while, yeah, the income goes down, but they say that the cost of living in those areas isn't taken into effect. And if you take into effect the cost of living, the income doesn't necessarily go down that much, which is the Heritage Foundation is used for a lot of the debate as far as on the conservative side.
But another issue that really hurts us in rural area is the prevailing wage. If you look at that, our schools could do maybe a roof and a parking lot for the cost of doing the roof. It's a lot of things like that. Our local county governments, our health departments, our ambulance districts, our fire departments, any tax-based structure out there in rural Missouri, when you get away from St. Louis, we're still having to pay those St. Louis wages. That is a big issue in rural Missouri, is the prevailing wage.
And I would expect that's another issue that could gain a lot of traction and the support of future Governor Greitens. Is that a fair assessment?
I think it is definitely something we'll be looking at also.
So in the last couple of minutes, I want to peer a little bit into the future. After 2018, you will hit term limits. You will be one of the few people in the Missouri legislature to serve all 16 years in both the House and the Senate. The other four in the Senate include Bob Dixon, Rob Schaff, Jay Wasson, and Ron Richard, who's the pro tem. And someone told me yesterday Kevin Engler in the House is about to hit this too. So I'm sure that is 2 years is an eternity in Missouri politics. We don't know what's going to happen. But where do you see your political future being? Are you thinking of this might be your last legislative hurrah over the next 2 years? Are you thinking of maybe running for something else after you leave the General Assembly?
I'm not really looking to run for any other position. I just hope my last 2 years here in the Senate are very good. It's been quite a ride. You talked about Williamstown, Missouri earlier. There's actually was a little school there that I went to. There was only seven in my class. But actually, there's been four state legislators that went to that little school that doesn't exist anymore.
Whoa.
That's pretty strange.
You mean in history or in, like, recent history?
Well, Senator Merrill.
Okay.
Yeah, Estelle Fretwell.
Okay.
Myself and Representative Jay Houghton.
Oh, okay. That is fairly recent, crazy.
Fairly recent.
But well, that's very noteworthy. I actually knew Senator Merrill, but we won't go there.
We won't go in there. I guess my other question is, do you think that the turning red of Northeast Missouri is a permanent thing? Or do you think that there is a possibility that Democrats could regain their footing? Because I have a couple of theories on this. Part of me wonders whether the old school conservative Democrats have either just permanently switched to being Republicans. Some of them may have aged out and are literally not living anymore. What's kind of your thought on the future of Northeast Missouri and its political leanings?
Oh, I think you're right in that assessment, but I will say the pendulum swings way too far both ways sometimes. I do think that we are going to continue to be very conservative in rural Missouri, especially Northeast Missouri. For the Democrats to pull them back in, I think the Democrat Party itself is going to have to change. With some olive branches and some changes in their policies.
I would have to imagine that if former U.S. Speaker Champ Clark was still alive today, and he would be like 190 years old, so that's probably not likely, he would be shocked to see how Republican Northeast Missouri has become. And maybe he would use his oratorical skills to rise the Democrats up again. But again, I'm not sure how effective a 190-year-old man can be in politics.
He was very good at the speech making. I know that's one thing that they do in Pike County. They still have you get up on a stump, an actual stump, and give a speech.
In honor of Champ Clark, one of the most successful federal legislators in Missouri history, next to Harry S. Truman. Thank you very much for your time. We really appreciate talking about policy and politics with you. For all of our stories, stlpublicradio.org. Follow me on Twitter at Jay Rosenbaum. Follow Joe on Twitter at
Jay Manis. That's JMANNIES.
And is there any way for people to get a hold of you via social media, website, or any other form of communication that you'd like to mention?
Well, of course, at my Senate website, if my constituents have an issue, that's what I always guide them to. I actually do have a Facebook page. I'm not very active on it, but I do have one. Oh, gosh.
Look him up on Facebook, even though he's not active. Until next time, so long.